thankful for the invitation and for the opportunity to come and be with you, and especially to stand before you. It's been a while since I've had this opportunity, and it's one I truly like. I enjoy being not only back here at Providence, but being able to show you what your encouragement over the years and all the help that you have given me over the years has come to, because really, I mean, I'm going to have to be honest, without your all's encouragement and your help throughout the years, you know, I wouldn't be standing up here. And I also want to thank those preachers that put their sermons and their PowerPoints up on the internet for other preachers to see. Because that's what helps me out as much as anything with my busy life and everything. I have to be honest, and I have to give a thank you and some recognition to them for them being willing to do that and to share their thoughts with other people. And this is one lesson tonight that goes along those lines. It's one that I found on the internet, and I got to reading, and it was just one that I think it helped me and I think should help us all think a little bit about our servitude, our ministry in the church. You know, when we think about David and think about what we have studied about him from the Old Testament, we usually think of a successful man. We think about the killing of Goliath, and we think about his battles against the Philistines. And then we think about him, about God accepting him as king over Israel. But in his own mind, it was going to be the building of the temple that would be the height of his accomplishment. In his mind, that was going to be his ultimate success. To put it in our terms, we might say that this was going to be the frosting on the cake. It was going to be his legacy. But David, however, wasn't permitted to build the temple, was he? Others would complete the task that he longed to finish. And so it could have been that David might have even gone to his grave thinking of himself in some measure as a failure. In some sense of having this goal that he wanted to accomplish but just wasn't able to. Now to the slide Sherman was talking about earlier. You know, each of us can relate to this disappointed king. You know, we know what it is like to miss the accomplishments of our dreams, don't we? Maybe not to the extent of Wile E. Coyote. But all of us have had dreams, things we've wanted to accomplish, but we have failed. We know what it is like to fail in our heart's desire. Some of us wonder even when our blundering failures is ever going to stop and we're finally going to get some success. I want us to also think about Moses. You know, when you think about Moses and his life, how he led Israel out of bondage and then in the wilderness for 40 years to bring them to the promised land. And it was a life, when you think about it, that was filled with burdens and heartaches and disappointments from the hand of those Israelites. None of us could probably think about or really comprehend all of the disappointments and all the burdens and stuff he had to endure those 40 years wandering in the wilderness. Even to the point, as we realize later, that in being so disappointed and hearing their murmurings, their complainings, that it led to his not being able to go into the promised land because his one act of failure kept him from that. There in Deuteronomy 32 and verse 49 it says, "This was the command of God to him." He says, "Go up this mountain of Abarim, Mount Nebo, which is the land of Moab, across from Jericho. View the land of Canaan, which I give to the children of Israel as a possession. So here he is, 40 years after starting this wilderness journey. He's finally able to see the promised land, a goal that he has been looking forward to. He has done so much in leading the people. However, in the next verse, God tells him what else. He says, go and look at it. In verse 50, he says, and die on the mountain which you ascend, and be gathered to your people, just as Aaron your brother died on Mount Hor and was gathered to his people. Yeah, Israel entered the promised land, but Moses didn't. With these two Bible examples in our own lives, I want us to ask ourselves today, are our lives really failures? Are we a failure when we try and it does not work out as well as we hoped? I want us to also realize that God has a different view of reckoning than what man does. God looks at something more probing and revealing than just outward appearances. I want us to go to our text now, there in 1 Kings chapter 8 and verses 17 and 19. It says, now it was in the heart of my father David to build a temple for the name of the Lord God of Israel. But the Lord said to my father David, whereas it was in your heart to build a temple for my name, you did well that it was in your heart. Nevertheless, you shall not build the temple, but your son who will come from your body, he shall build the temple for my name. From this, we learn that God has a different standard of measuring success. And I think it's going to be wise and helpful for us tonight to learn a little bit more about this standard. And first of all, I want us to realize that God measures by our longings. You know, it's important to note that God measures success not necessarily by the achievements that we have made in our lives and in our service, but what we long or intently desire to achieve. He measures us not really necessarily by what's in our hand, but what is in our hearts. And by looking at that, I want us to realize that God is measuring us right now. Throughout our lives, every day, He is measuring us. He is surveying our heart's intents. And He knows what we desire, what we think, and what we want. The psalmist put it this way in Psalm 139 in verses 1 through 4. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. He measures us not by our actual triumphs, but what we are looking for, and what our heart's desires are right now. When you came to services tonight, what was the intent of your heart? That's what the Lord looks to. And as we made mention of earlier, God's ways differs from man's ways. When we talk about man's ways, we're talking more what we usually call the world's ways. And from man's perspective, success is measured purely by outward appearances. Before any man or woman is counted as successful, what is it they must do? Well, they must bring home the bacon. They must bring home the big prize to be successful. This is just one illustration I came across. This was put up at a newspaper office. And it's 57 rules to becoming a success. Rule number one, deliver the goods. Rule number two, forget the other 56. All that matters is them newspapers get delivered. That's all that counts to them. To do one's heart's desire doesn't seem to count for almost anything in today's world, does it? In sports, in business, in school, all that seems to matter is the bottom line. Did you win? Now, before somebody takes this to the extreme, just let me say, I ain't talking about handing out participation trophies. I'm not talking about those who have a desire. I'm talking about those who have a desire to do their best and to give it their all to accomplish something. Or those who are willing to even take less pay for a job that they like instead of getting more money for something that they hate doing. You know, God looks at things differently than most men. We must realize He looks inwardly. He looks at our hearts. Going back to 1 Samuel 16 in verses 6 and 7, when Samuel was sent to anoint the king over Israel, and he was going through the different men, in verse 6 he says, "So it was when they came that he looked at Eliab and said, 'Surely the Lord's anointed is before him.' But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. For the man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.'" The Lord looks at our hearts. He looks at the intent and character of our hearts instead of necessarily the outward appearances of what we accomplish. Another thing I think we need to remember when we are talking about this subject is that there's going to be coming a time when these worldly priorities that we think of are going to be reversed. That is, those who the world deems as first, as the prestigious, they're going to be the ones who will be last. There in Matthew chapter 20 and verse 16, it says, "So the last will be first, and the first last, for many are called, but few are chosen." Many of the people whom the world deems as successful, who loom large, important, and powerful here, will in the end be insignificant. We know this will be the case because God looks at our heart, at our intent, and not on the outwardly achievements that might be accomplished. The story is told of a knight of years ago that went in search of the Holy Grail. And in leaving the city, he was adorned in his uniform, decked out on a beautiful horse, in armor and in gold. And he met up with a beggar. And when he came to the beggar, he got out a gold coin and with a disgusted look on his face just flipped the beggar a gold coin. The beggar refused it. Wouldn't even pick it up. Years later, after searching far and wide and never finding it, this same knight came back. Older, wiser, worn and tired. He saw the same beggar standing there. This time all he had to give him was a piece of bread. This time the beggar gladly received it. Why? Well, good given without love is far less than bread given by the heart and hand of a brother. As we see also, we must remember that the last will be first. I mean, how many of us can think about those in our own lives, our brothers and sisters, who maybe have not had that long of a service in God's work? They was converted, they desired to serve, they trained, they prepared to do so, but then their lives were cut short. The day will come when these will be credited with great accomplishments. They may ask, well, Lord, when did we achieve these victories for you? And God might just say to them, these are the things for which you longed. Remember, it is well that such is in our hearts also. Another thing that we need to remember, when we look at a lesson like this and a topic like this, we need to remember to test our own hearts. You know, I'm going to admit it right here that there is danger in preaching a sermon like this. There is a danger when you sit back there and listen to it. You know, I think these Rubik cubes are still around. I think a lot of us have used them, played with them, tried to solve them. It's something that was very difficult to do. This sermon is difficult. It's dangerous. Because it takes that first Rubik cube, and to some it turns it into one like this, if where it's the same color on all sides. It makes it awful easy to solve, doesn't it? Well, oftentimes it may give those who are idle, who are uninvolved, a feeling of ease or justification. Like praising oneself for the big things that you would do only if you had the opportunities or the talents. But are you using the opportunities that are available to you? You know, it's easy to make excuses when we ought to be making opportunities for ourselves. Story is told one time of a man of small stature. And he was bragging to this very large man. And he told him, if I was as big as you, I would go out into the woods and I'd find me the biggest bear that I could and I'd just wrestle it to the ground just to prove to him that I could do it. Just to let him know who the boss is. Well, the larger man looked at his smaller friend and said, you know there are smaller bears in the wood also. We can make excuses all we want. What is the intent of our heart? Are we really listing the reasons, or are we just making excuses? What are you doing with the present opportunities that you have? I want us to think back again to David. We noticed about how he wanted to build a temple. God denied him of that. How many of us would have felt sorry for ourselves? How many of us would have just given up because we was not allowed to do what we wished for or what we had as a goal? David went as far as he could in making it easy for those who would build the temple. The point is that he did the hidden, the obscure, the behind-the-scenes work to get it done, to prepare the materials for those who was going to be able to do the actual task. David was not asking for honor He was not asking for fame. He was asking for the privilege to help. Why was the poor widower the greater giver? There in Mark chapter 12 and verses 41 through 44, we have the recording of this occasion. And it says, "Now Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury, and many who were rich put in much. Then one poor widow came and threw in two mites, which make a quadrants. So he called his disciples to himself and said to them, 'I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty put in all that she had, her whole livelihood.'" Why was her giving so great, so much greater? Well, it wasn't because she cried and complained about how little she could give. And it wasn't because she told her family and friends how much she would give if only she had more. What made this widow great was that although her hand was almost empty, her heart overflowed with the desire to do what she could. Now let's think about the application that we must make. We need to be careful. We need to beware of deadening our conscience with mere talk of what we would do only if. Opportunities abound around us right here, right now, for growth in this congregation and in ourselves, for growth and help in the worship service, and just for everyday service of a Christian. The real question is, what is your heart's intent? Do you really want to help? Do you really want to be a servant? Or is it just filled with excuses and what ifs? Now I want us lastly to look at the result of this measurement. If God really looks at our hearts, looks at our heart's intent instead of necessarily what is actually accomplished, what does that mean to us? And when we think about how God looks at the intent of our hearts, there should be great comfort. We ought to be able to rejoice in this. Because first of all, this means that all of us are on absolutely equal ground. Yeah, I might be able to stand up here and bring a sermon to you, but when it comes to our heart's intent, we're on equal grounds. Do you help out in other ways? What is your desire? God only requires of us what is in direct proportion to how He has equipped us. We know this is the case because most of you are familiar with the parable of the talents. And in the parable of the talents, much is required to do to whom much is given. But just remember, something, even though it may be little, is required of each of us. And when we use whatever it is that God has given us, what happened in the parable? The people that used their talents gained more talents, didn't they? And so then they had more talents to use. We need to remember, every one of us is on equal ground. We're only required to use the talents that we have. We need to also remember that although we fail, victory is possible for failures. Can victory be ours even though we have failed? And I mean sometimes really failed? Well, all you have to do is just go back and remember that all of us have sinned. All of us have failed and fallen short of the glory of God. But we all have become victors. At least those who have obeyed have become victors because their heart's desire was to do so. Can we respond to being saved by His grace? Are we willing to continually fall upon that? Have you failed at anything lately? Do you consider yourself a failure? I don't want to see a show of hands, but how many came tonight thinking that you have little or if nothing at all to bring before God except for lost and broken opportunities? Maybe sometime this week or just in the last little past of your life, you have thought about how little that you have accomplished for the Lord. You may have went out there and tried to convert people and saw nothing. Maybe it is at the church that you've tried to encourage people and it seems like they haven't grown. Remember, it is not the outward success that is crowned. It is not the gifts of our hands that are reckoned. It is the real test, the test of our hearts. Any undertaking we make for Christ's sake cannot fail. If we win our goal, we are a victor. If we fall short of our goal, if our heart is right, in God's eyes, we are still the victor. The story is told of a little girl who wanted to buy her ailing mother a very special gift. The only possession that she had that would allow her to do so was a china doll. On her way to sell the doll, she tripped and broke it. She came home defeated, with no special gift and only fragments of a broken doll and a broken heart. The sick mother, in finding out what had taken place, took the little girl into her arms and said, "Honey, your failure has brought richer joy than had you succeeded." To the world, how does that make any sense? It doesn't. But in God's eyes, God can explain it because she did well to have it in her heart. What is your heart's intent tonight? If you've never obeyed the gospel, is it in your heart's intent to set that right? If your heart is really intent on that, you will do it. Maybe you've fallen away. And you keep telling yourself, I need to go back. I need to make my life right. If it's your heart's intent, you will do it. If there's anything that we can do tonight to help you get your life back together, to help you get your soul on the right road. Maybe it is that you're having problems in your spiritual life and you need the prayers here of the church. Whatever it is, we're willing to help you. So if we can help you tonight, please take this opportunity that you have and make it known to us. Come forward as we stand and as we sing.